Music Monday is back. I'm Bobby Manning. My producer and his coach with the mic in hand is Taylor McLeod.
Yes, sir.
And I'm letting Taylor take over today. He's got a good interview, but we're going to get into a mid-year edition of this show. This is Dome Theory. You can find us on Stitcher, Apple, Spotify, all those different platforms. What we've done is thrown together some mid-year playlists. It's been a good year for music so far, I'd say. Some disappointments, major disappointments that we'll get into. But overall, I've had some artists that I love come out with some good material. The quarantine period was going to be so interesting. We went back to the first episode we did under the quarantine was Mel and I, who's usually here on Music Monday, did a look ahead at what, the quarantine period could bring, because obviously tours got called off. I was supposed to go see Thundercat like the Friday after the Wednesday that the NBA got called off. So that was like one of the first shows here in Boston that got called off, and we haven't had any since. So no touring. It's hard to not say that that has had an impact on the amount of releases that we've seen. There haven't been a lot of high-profile things coming out. I know Melon is Farther released an album. I'm excited to talk to him about that. The Weeknd had a high-profile one come out, and that's just the kind of stuff that I think was dead set into this period and really couldn't be changed all that much, because as flexible as music is now for smaller artists, some of the bigger stuff is tough to push back, tough to change the dates. There's all kinds of physicals that still need to be run in that capacity. But smaller artists, like I'd say, Kali Uchis, who had a project lined up in the near future, definitely kicked one back, went with a smaller release. That was one of my favorite ones, four tracks. Nice, homey feel to it. Her vocals are always amazing to me. That four-track EP that she released was one of my highlights of quarantine. To Feel Alive, the EP. Got an artist through social media to do the cover art. And about 10 minutes long. Very short, very to the point. Tells a short story of, being locked in on this relationship where she's being spoiled at the beginning. And then by the end of it, 10 minutes later, moving on. I thought it was a fun album. Always a fan of everything she does. And that was one of my favorite releases through this quarantine. I'm always going to be on the shorter side of things. The longer side, like Teyana Taylor's sophomore album that we just heard come out, 24 tracks, 80 minutes. Wasn't something I was all that interested in. So, Taylor, I'll dive into your playlist a little bit. I know you just sent it over to me, the mid-year. And I know one guy you've been looking on was a guy named Divion, who's from where?
I'm pretty sure Givion's from Chicago. Let me look it up.
Yeah. So he appeared on this Drake single that I gave a lot of crap to. I think on that same exact episode where he interpolated the Superman line. This one, he used the song Cry. I like this one better.
No, he's from Long Beach, California. It was just stuck in my head that he was on Chicago Freestyle.
It was interesting. So he's on the Chicago Freestyle. I hear him. He sounds a lot like Sampa, who's a regular Drake collaborator, especially on that track. But he has an album come out in the near aftermath of that that really put himself in his own lane and had this nice neo-soul feel to it. Groovy synths. Nice, smooth, powerful vocals, kind of like an Aloe Black or a Sampha a little bit too. Very boisterous. He had a nice sensual release. One of my favorites, probably top 10 of this whole year so far.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really like it. I think there's a ton of Frank influence in it, which is why I'm attracted to it so much. And like you said, the sounding like Sampha thing, everyone thought on Chicago Freestyle it was Sampha. Obviously, it wasn't. But the whole project from... It's like you said, it's a short project. It's not that many tracks. It's an easy listen. And then like something like World We Created, which is like a smoother.
Yeah, that made my list.
Yeah, it's kind of like a, that's kind of like in, I don't know, like it's a smoother track. But then there's like I Want You, Favorite Mistake, like stuff like that where it gets a little bit slower, a little bit, more he can show off as opposed to making, the smooth music. So I thought it was a track or a project with a lot of versatility, and I've really enjoyed it.
Speaking of Frank, he had a pair of singles, gets into the Spanish wave a little bit with Cayendo, some Spanish verses on there, Dear April, those two tracks for this year. Not my favorite from him. They're both, it's always nice to hear from him, but a little more of the fainter pitch back in the background Frank style stuff, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, but if you want to hear more upfront and personal Frank Ocean, like we heard on Blonde, like we heard on Channel Ocean throughout the, you know, most of those two albums, he had those
channel,
stripped back moments
channel,
on
channel
those
Channel Ocean,
too.
Channel Ocean or Channel Orange.
Dome Theory. That's kind of what we based the show off a little bit, right?
Yeah, I was pushing for Theory Orange as our title, but there's that gym chain, Orange Theory.
Yeah. If they want to run it up, let's hear it. I like those two tracks. Now, I think what we really want to get into here, and I think the story of the year so far, among some other releases we'll get into toward the end of this intro here, was the rise of Griselda. Westside yep. Gunn just dropped his second album this year. I don't think we either of us have listened enough to get into that yet. But Pray for Paris, maybe the best rap album of the year with big features from Tyler, the Creator. You know, obviously his collaborators, Conway, Benny. Very, you know, 90s style, bell heavy, sample heavy production, drums. And he comes out with this Ghostface Killer, like, brash bravado that you know, I'd almost compare to Action Bronson too. It bothered me at first. I had to listen to the album about three times to finally get used to that inflection that he has, the way he raps. But once you get past that, it's great lyrics, very aggressive, animated, lots of personality too. And those guys have fantastic chemistry everywhere you've seen them this year.
I mean, they're family. They're legit family, so it makes sense. Connor, actually, my roommate, our friend Connor, turned me onto them a while ago, and I've been, you know, into it ever since. Benny's one of my favorite rappers out right now, and I think he probably will be. I think his discography will stick with me. It's like one of those like really special artists where it's like, I don't know, everything hits, everything resonates. But yeah, that first Gunn album was crazy. Obviously, 327 with Tyler and Joey Badass on it. That's an incredible song. I mean, their whole run, I'm so glad that they're reaching the forefront of things, and because they've been doing this for a long time. I mean, going back, like Tana Talk 3 came out a long time ago, and that's kind of when I think stuff started to really, really blow up for them, and since then they haven't looked back. Obviously dealing with Shady Records and now with Rockefeller, like they're just on such a trajectory in releasing music like this. And even, you know, to further conversation and get into what I know you want to talk about, we had a Benny feature and a Conway feature on Alfredo, so.
You want to get there already, huh?
Hey, I put the entire mixtape on my playlist.
Freddie Gibbs, man. So he's obviously been in the news a little bit recently for his feud with DJ Academics. So that if you're not familiar with him, that's a taste for this guy's personality. He loves to butt heads. He loves to go at friends, foes on his social media alike. And he just has this cult of personality around him. It's very loose. It's very fun. He loves to just clown everybody around him. And I think his personality finally came out the most it has on this album with the extra use of the ad-libs, like, bitch, you could never, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff that he uses as taglines on his Instagram. We've talked about this album extensively on here at this point. I don't think we need to go too deep into it, but no. Great chemistry with Rick Ross on Scotty Beam. I feel like that's one of the five best rap tracks this year. I love the Last Dance lyrics. I know The Undefeated had a good story about how this was like the quintessential quarantine album, and that was one of those articles that I look at and I'm just like, damn, I wish I wrote that, because that's exactly how I felt. It was very insulated. You know, I had the feel of someone just kicking it, watching sports on TV, the documentary, all that. And it was very inspired by it. And something to rap about, obviously one of the most eccentric beats I've heard all year, the nice guitar flow and kickback, and then Tyler, the Creator, with a very dreamy verse on the back end. Big feature here from him.
He's so good at features. Like Tyler's features at this point, it's like, That verse felt a lot to me like Smuckers. You know what I mean? Like kind of like that slower where it's like well thought out, and you just know it's like he's so deep in his bag when he does stuff like that. It's just awesome to listen to.
What's so great about him too, and you talk about a Smucker's a cherry bomb, that was when you saw him getting so close to what he was going to become as an artist. And we've obviously seen what he became, this glossier, you know, flower boy is like how you can describe him as an artist. It's very sensual. I was just listening to the Al Green Dream sample that he used on Igor's last track there, Can We Be Friends? It's just so glossy, synth heavy, and the lyrics on here, jumping off the boat on this album at the beginning, at the end, and then on the 327 track that you already mentioned there, the glitter in his hair, glitter in his fingernails, like it's all so descriptive imagery that befits him. So colorful, it matches with the clothes. I mean, he has reached this point as an artist where he has the visuals, he has the skill rap-wise, and he has the versatility across all these different levels of sound. He produced the whole Igor album, which won Rap Album of the Year. I mean, this guy has become, and obviously he's someone who grew up idolizing Kanye, you would figure, with his sounds, with just how experimental he is across a number of different platforms. He's reached Kanye-esque level with the amount of lanes that he's able to dominate at this point. Now you see it with features too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to put Tyler near Kanye as a music producer, but
if anybody is going to get to that level though.
Yeah, like, no, for sure. I mean, he's got the creativity, he's got the skill, he's got the talent, and he's got the like confidence in himself that it's like nothing's too big to achieve. So in that sense, I agree.
I know you're not the biggest MF Doom fan either, but a track like Babies and Fools brings back like that 70s, you know, like jazz, funk, fusion. That beat is awesome on there. That one, as I've listened to this album over and over again, obviously when you first listen to it, Something to Rap About sticks out first. But that album, that track with Conway has really come up there for me too. In the back end of the album, he gets into some of the personal details I think made Bandana great. They're less in-your-face tracks, but you got to dig into those just as much as the front end of this album really sticks out. It didn't surpass Bandana for me. That's still his favorite release for me, but brilliant one nonetheless, probably my favorite this year. So Mel talked about music needing to meet the moment. As the protests have gone off, as we've seen so much social upheaval the last month or so, we're over a month now into it, and we've obviously done our episodes about that. But Anderson .Paak comes through with Lockdown. The video is awesome. J-Rock makes an appearance on there with a verse. Ton of imagery about the protests, about being out there, the experience, the rubber bullets, the smooth, you know, bass line that runs through the back of it. It's nothing profound, but it's done more than anybody else has done in regards to the movement, in regards to a protest anthem. Like, it's no All Right from 2015, but I thought it was a phenomenal track. And Paak has made his steps into those waters at this point, with tracks off Oxnard that were talking about Trump, but they were a little more goofy, tongue-in-cheek type stuff, like Trump's got a love child, I hope that bitch is Buck Wild. Like, it was nothing profound, but this one, I think, like, dug into the feelings, the sentiment of this moment. Not everybody has to make particularly profound music, and Anderson .Paak is someone who's just so prolific as an artist, as a musician, that I don't think he even had to go down that lane to reach a new level. But He released a special track with that Lockdown one. You got to listen to that a few times and really get a feel for it.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that record a lot. Lil Baby, The Bigger Picture, I think that probably reached more people than Paak's record, and it was just as good. I like that one a lot. I mean, obviously they're two different artists, two different lanes, but in my interview with Kemet, that's gonna run in a little bit, we talked about both of those records, and like you said, meeting the moment, doing what, you know, like using that voice to speak from an outsider's perspective, kind of looking at it as an accomplished artist, but also both of them, you know, being a part of it, being out there doing their thing. So yeah, I mean, I thought Paak's record was great, and I think Lil Baby had his place too. And he's been, first of all, if you watch everything that's coming out, Twitter's really coming around. Yeah, well, Twitter's been on him forever, but like right now, the whole thing is like Lil Baby can't miss. And like, honestly, mid-year 2020, anything, like he can't miss right now, which is insane.
I'll be checking that out then with praise like that. Mac Miller, yeah. hard to believe it came out this year, but January, that's how we kicked off the year, a much different time. Packaged vocals that he was working on with another artist and instrumentals and all that stuff was supposed to be like a B-side record to some degree to Swimming. And it comes out with a different feel, a different tone, and a level of writing and moodiness that befit, obviously, what we've been dealing with it following his death since 2018. It was a massive surprise and hit the mark extraordinarily. Like, everybody had great things to say about this album. It's a tough listen. It's emotional. It's got a cover. Everybody's one of my favorite tracks on there. It start to finish, it runs so well. And Good News, the single track off there, is just an emotional roller coaster. The plucky guitar strings that run through it, the lyrics on there, the writing on this album is phenomenal. This is your album, Taylor. You've listened to this probably 100 times at this point. I'll let you dig in a little bit on it.
Yeah, I mean, Circles, the whole idea is that there was supposed to be 3 albums, possibly Swimming, Circles, and then there was maybe a third one on the horizon. Not maybe not on the horizon, but at some point that was supposed to be more like hip-hop tracks, more just, you know, Mac going in. But honestly, Swimming is one of my favorite projects ever. Obviously, Mac Miller is one of my favorite artists ever, if not my favorite artist ever. I listen to Swimming all the time still, daily, like almost, you know, front to back daily. And to me, Circles, despite coming out posthumously, is much more optimistic, much more at peace, much more calm, much more accepting than I thought Swimming was. So while it's so sad that it came out after his death, I think that there is more peace in this album than in any project I've ever heard from him. Like more peace, because obviously Divine Feminine, there was like an air of happiness and an air of excitement, an air of like, all right, you know, we've gotten over this hurdle. But to me, weirdly enough, Circles was like, there's a piece to it, and it's a bookend, and it feels right. It felt like it matched the moment perfectly. It felt like it did what it was supposed to, and it's a beautifully put together album, beautifully produced album, and obviously Mac did his thing.
Yeah, it's so ethereal, spacey. Obviously, he's gotten a lot more in the sense and just these instruments that really bring out that feel
Especially with John Bryan. I mean, you can hear his influence. He played the end of So It Goes on Swimming, and, you know, he is the person who put this whole Circles project together, so.
Love Complicated, love Boo World. There really isn't a track on this album that I don't like, and when the deluxe came around about a month later, a couple of Thundercat back tracks were a blessing to hear as well. The blessings keep coming when it comes to Mac Miller and the music that keeps on giving. And he reached such a great level at the end of his life, and it is sad to think that progression isn't going to continue. It wasn't quite the Tyler, the creator level that we talked about earlier, but in his own artistic lane, he reached what he was looking for as he tried a bunch of different stuff throughout his career. This was a marquee moment. You can compare this and Swimming all you want. I thought it would just fit very nicely alongside and complemented it well. It didn't sound like a typical just throwaway B-side album. Like, this was orchestrated well by John Bryan and the family and all that. Who knows how far along it was and how much was built up, but you know, all the lyrics, all the recording was there on Mac's end, and he did his part, at least on that side of things.
Yeah, I mean, according to Brian, it was pretty much not almost done, but it was at a point where it didn't take a lot for him to have things fall into place.
So Lil Wayne had a good release this year. That one was a little bloated to me. We're about to see Travis Scott and Kid Cudi collaborate at the Scots. Was a hit single this year. Number one, Kid Cudi's first number one record ever. It didn't blow me away, especially for two artists to have a level of sonic influence like both of them do. It was a little stripped back and just kind of playful. So it'll be interesting to see what they're both capable of. They had some prolific collaborations on each of their albums. So those are two of my favorite tracks from last decade when they got together. So I'll be looking for a little more from those two if they do have a full project coming. It seems like they do. Exciting to still see Kid Cudi so active, because he had those lapses where he would just disappear for a year, year and a half. Obviously had his mental struggles that he was able to overcome to some degree. But it's just great to see him out there. The people that are influenced by him are so excited to work with him. Obviously, Travis Scott, that's where the name came from, Scott Mascetti. So I'll be looking out for that. But the single didn't blow me away.
No, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of either of those two artists. I like them enough, and obviously they have their moments that are undeniable. But to me, they're two artists who have achieved a certain level of, they know that their stuff is going to go no matter what because they're them. And obviously Cudi, not so much in the middle, in those lapses. Like you said, he had some stuff that, you know, wasn't as well received, but Travis Scott knows exactly what he is. He knows anything he puts out is going to be loved by a certain group of people. And Kid Cudi's the same way. You have these pockets of people on the internet who are going to love whatever it is, no matter what it is. And so it'll be the most insane thing in the world for a while. Coming off Astroworld, Travis, though, he has a it's going to be big for him to match that, because even though I'm not the biggest fan of that project, I really liked it when it came out, and then it kind of lost its luster.
Isn't
to
that
me.
Something? I was on a plane that day. That was the day Max Swimming came out too. Yeah. It was like a bomb going off when that album dropped. Like just the level of noise and
even Sicko Mode. Like I'm a huge Drake fan. I talked to Kim about Drake too. But even Sicko Mode, like I like that song a lot, and it's fun when you're out and it's, you know, crowd and whatever. But like that whole project just lost a lot of its luster to me as time went on. And it doesn't help that like his shoe collabs, I don't love those. I just don't like a lot of the stuff that ends up happening around that. So it's like whatever he and Cudi do, I'll probably give it a listen or two, but I'm not waiting for it at this point.
I think the biggest surprise this year was Jay Electronica coming out with his debut album.
Just the fact that he did it was the surprise.
Yeah. But a massive co-sign from Jay-Z adds another layer of surprise on top of that. Obviously, there's a guy who's backed his career quite a bit, but Jay-Z's backed a number of different careers. You've never seen him go front to back with features on an album like this. It was almost a collaborative album, the level of features that he gave to this. And our friend Jason Buford called Shiny Suit Theory Jay-Z's best guest verse ever. And he came out with the verses on here. Definitely more of an old man Jay feel. He's not quite the young, active hustler that he was early in his career. And you can hear that he's a little more stripped back, a little more conscious, a little more taking offense to some of the jabs that have been thrown at him. I know he went at the whole NFL Goodell thing that people were criticizing him for when he did his official collaboration with the league. I think the line was something to the tune of, why would I sell out? I'm already rich, which is just kind of like get the hell out of here. Not my favorite mark of the album, but these two came out. They're going jab for jab with each other. A lot of talk of Jay Electronica's faith, which I find interesting. Some of the sound cuts on here, you got Farrakhan, you got that kind of stuff being thrown around. Expertly produced. That Rihanna cut on there where they take that song off Ante and run it back, and it's just like this very eccentric track on there. And then obviously it ends with the Kobe tribute that they recorded on the day he passed away. That album was phenomenal. Not for everybody. I've talked to a number of my friends who thought it was a little too spacey and some of the vocal cuts went a little too long. But you just boil this down to those two rapping. And Travis Scott makes an appearance on here too with a very faint hook. This was one of the most surprising and awesome albums all year long. Another one that came out early that just dropped like a bomb. But if you've been waiting for this guy, if you've been impressed by this guy and a little frustrated by the fact that he's been so slow to release, he made up for it and then some, taking the time that he did.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a moment in hip hop for sure. Jay Electronica, to me, like my first introduction to him was Control with Big Sean and Kendrick back in 2013. And because of the lack of music, I'm definitely a person who gravitates towards artists who have huge catalogs, right? So like the Drakes, the Futures, the Mac Millers.
Future, yeah.
Like those three are, you know, I'm pretty sure if you follow me on Twitter, if you know me in real life, like those three are my favorite. And it's because of how much music they have. And there's different pockets you can get into. You can get into, you know, an album a week. You can get into, you know, whatever. And so someone like Jay Electronica, it's not like I was had a ton of anticipation for the album, but to hear just to hear two rappers like him and Hove go back and forth, you know, so often, it's like watching good basketball, watching, you know what I mean? It's like watching just it's a product you can appreciate because of not necessarily its place, because I don't think its place is as cemented as it probably would have been. I mean, granted, we did have a pandemic, so things did get kind of jumbled, but just hearing just two guys rap like that with each other was special.
Yeah, you hope that's one that's going to squeeze into the Grammy field, even though it was released early in the cycle. You don't have to throw that back to next year. I always have concerns when things get placed like that. So we're going to get into your interview here. I know we've gone over a lot of our favorite music from the year. I do have one more I want to throw at you, but you're taking over Music Monday today. You got a good interview ahead for us. Want to pitch it, preview it a little bit to the people?
Yeah, so Kemet High, he graduated from Q's last year, and he and I had a magazine class together. And he works at XXL now, worked at Complex for a while. And so I just wanted to talk to him because that's kind of a lane that I'm interested in venturing into. I know that you do a lot of music writing as well. But just to kind of talk to someone who's on a similar path to you and I in terms of school, then, you know, getting into these publications. So I talked to him just about the experience of those types of publications, got into a little bit of, Black Lives Matter conversation. And then we then ended with some, pretty self-indulgent Drake talk for myself. But
well, I'm glad you saved that for the end. I did not want to talk about that Drake project with you. But one more I'll throw at you before we get out of here. That Megan Thee Stallion remix with Beyonce. You've heard it all over the radio. It was a massive moment. She has just mastered the pop appeal of this time. Yeah. Whether with Hell TikTok, yeah. With all these dance challenges, and just with making very danceable, viral heavy, abrasive music. She is phenomenal. She's raunchy. She makes people uncomfortable. I love it. And yeah, She's a superstar. This Savage track was going to be the biggest hit of her career, and she's had some big ones through two albums now. And then to get Beyonce on there and just be going back and forth verse for verse with her, not something you see Beyonce jump out there and do, but shows the level of respect, the level of Houston camaraderie. Houston's a very home city. Absolutely. Like the people there back each other. There's a definite culture, collaboration that goes on across the board there. I know I did a piece about Solange a year and a half ago or so, and there was a lot of intersections between her and the city and other people there. And I got to meet Jason Moran, who's a jazz artist from Houston. You wouldn't think there'd be an intersection there, but there really was. And I heard some of the influence that he had on her on there, and that he was obviously familiar with her music. That was a very cool moment when all those kind of things just came together around Houston. And we know Travis Scott and the others that have come out of there as well. But the only thing I didn't like about this track was the almost like cringy moment where she's talking about Demon Time and OnlyFans. Like, is Beyonce even familiar with that? Maybe she is, but it felt product placement to
it's
me.
It's not
this
product
is something-
placement. It's exactly what it's Beyonce dipping back into. Yo, I am a normal, like I'm an artist just like all these. You know what I mean? Commenting on the times just because we don't see her like the same way we see everyone else. And most of her work is so like, you know what I mean? So like
out there, yeah,
avant garde. You know? Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it's always cool to hear when she kind of comes back to earth a little bit. And then it's a shame like the summer didn't happen, or the summer's not happening the way it would normally, because like you said, like that would be the song.
Mm-hmm. All right, Taylor, we're excited to hear this. I'll be going later this week with John, the founder of the basketball tournament. I know that got going yesterday as we talk here on July 5th, and we'll see that. That's one of the big bubbles, quarantines to get going. We've obviously talked extensively about the issues that the NBA is running into. Justin Rowan and I had a good episode on Friday. If you missed that over the fourth weekend, definitely want to hear it. Victor Oladipo has been added to the fold of guys who are stepping out of this thing now at this point. But we also look back at the decision 10 years later. Tuesday is going to be the 10-year anniversary of that as you listen to this on Monday. So I'll get some video cuts out of that. Make sure you subscribe, as I talked about. Taylor?
Quick note for this interview. Kemet and I did talk about Kanye a little bit. This was before he announced that he was going to run for president. So there's no president talk about Kanye, but yeah. So we talk about it, but he hadn't tweeted that out yet. So,
all right, here it is.
I am Taylor McLeod running solo today. Bobby and I talked about it. I'm going to do a couple more of these solo interviews, kind of branch out, get some more people on the show. Today, we have Kemet High on, and let me correct me if I'm wrong. You work at Complex, but have had bylines at XXL, Fader, and a bunch of other places, right?
Word. So working at XXL now as of like the last couple months, but just left Complex. Bylines are accurate though.
Perfect. Yeah, because I saw the last thing I saw from you was it's the high-pitched voices. Yeah. The high-pitched voice trend in rap and how that's really catchy right now. You know, just to give listeners a little bit of background, I met you last year in a magazine article writing class at Syracuse. And funny enough, I was pretty, not necessarily quiet, I would say, but I definitely kept to myself, kind of sat there, hood up, hat on every day. And
word.
I think one time we were doing this activity and it was something like we had to write these details about someone in the class and we all had to figure out if we could figure out who is it about.
Word.
Something like, you wrote something like he pulls his hat down over his eyes, making a bubble as lifeless as the skies outside, which it's miserable in Q's all the time. But you said that and I was like, damn, that's really how I come off. But that was funny. But yeah, I had to bring that up.
No, I feel you. I'm always on this. You already know, like the same type of stuff, walking to class, hooded up, chilling, not really like into it like that, but just present physically. It's like that. It's like that.
Yeah, no, for sure. So like, what's it been like? Because you were a grad student. I was in my junior year. We were in this magazine article writing class. You know, you learn about each other through writing, through these personal essays we share. What's it been like in that last, year and change for you, since we were at school? Obviously different paths, but what's it been like for you?
Man, it's been crazy, more so in terms of elevation. I mean, being a writer in school and outside of school is like two different worlds. Like, of course you can get your feet wet and get your connections and your bylines, but physically being away from where all these magazines are, is a completely different world. So coming to New York and just being able to walk into offices and to connect with people in person instead of the email, it's been a completely different world. A lot harder, obviously, too, because, you don't have the school thing to fall back on, it's like you're fully invested in the game. You got to go hard. It's been crazy. It's been fun, though, I will say that. But yeah, whole new world.
Yeah, man. I mean, I remember, like I said, we had class together. And then I remember this past fall, I was just on Twitter. Obviously, the Q's Music Twitter branches out way, way beyond just people at school. So yeah. I was just scrolling through and I saw, the interview with Brent on Complex. And I opened it up and I saw the byline. I was like, oh, damn, bro. Like, that's Kemet from class. Like, that's crazy. Like, he's at like one of the big names right now. That's insane. So, just like getting into this, like, you just said you're invested in the game now. It's real. It's not, you don't have that school thing to fall back on. What's it like seeing your name, as a byline for these publications, that we all, came up reading? And then what's the experience like actually like working there? Is it as like, crazy as you think it's going to be? Like, what's that like?
Man, well, one, it's reassuring to see your name like on these big publications. And I mean, that's no telling, or it has no tail on like the writing per se, because I feel like some of the best writers could write for blogs that people don't even click. But I think in a way it also still is reassuring to see like me as a music journalist, my name with a Complex or a XXL, because it kind of lets me know I'm doing something right. And I have that amplified voice in the culture, which I really appreciate. So yeah, what was the second part of your question? My bad.
Just like what's that experience like? Because obviously you come up writing, at these different, places as you climb the ladder, and then like the Complex and XXL, like that's, in my eyes, that's like, the top, because I came up on like in the internet part of it. So like you have the big magazines, or like the quote unquote like Rolling Stone, like people look at that, it's like the top. But for me, 22 year old, it's like Complex and XXL, that's like the top for me. So like, what's that like, that experience working there?
Definitely. Well, you learn so much on a day-to-day basis, especially being so young, walking into buildings where, people are 30 and 35 and they've been writing for 15 years and 20 years. I think what it really is it forces you to step up. It's kind of nervous at times, because even if you feel like you deserve to be there, you still realize how crazy it is, and you still realize that you have to compete on the same level with people who aren't fresh out of school like you are. You're competing with people that you've been reading their byline probably since you were a kid, But it's kind of like basketball in a way, you know. Sometimes when you step on the court and the team is better than you, you play to the level of the competition. So that's really what it's been like. But it's crazy. It's a lot of overthinking, you know, of like, oh, man, should I pitch this? And, oh, am I doing all right? You know, but you learn a lot in the same breath. And then you also get frustrated in the same breath, to be honest, because, you know, just being so young, I think you're in a position to doubt yourself. And when something doesn't go right, I mean, depending on who you're working with and what the situation is, something doesn't go right, it's not always somebody there who's going to explain it to you. You know, people are so invested in the game and they're so invested into their own craft that, you know, it's not like an internship where they might sit down and be like, hey, well, this is what you did wrong, or hey, you should do it like this. So it's kind of scary sometimes too, and nerve wracking for that reason, because it's like people are so to themselves, you don't really have a lot of guidance. But what that does is how I've learned to channel it is just to trust yourself, you know, because when you lose that confidence as a writer, it's going to be able to show in your writing and how you carry yourself. So it's been all of that. It's been good and bad, two sides to it for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that was going to be my next question is like, because like writing, it's like about clips the entire time you're a writer, like you're not just clips, but at least the quality of clips, but you're trying to get, you know, you're trying to get your stuff out. You're trying to get, you know, stories done. That's interesting for you to say that you're kind of, you to feel like you're on your own and it's like up to you to step up, because I was going to ask, are there like, you know, like you said, with the basketball, like metaphor, are there like vets who like, you know, do look out for you, or is it really like once you get there, it's like, nah, like you got to get your work done or you're going to fall off.
Definitely. I mean, and there are always vets. I would say in my experience, I've realized less often than not are people willing to go out of their way to help. But even with that, one thing I've been doing is, you kind of like, you can't accept that, you know, because if you're in a position with these people, with these OGs who have been in the game for that long and you have access to them, utilize that. So if they're not coming to you and saying, hey, well, this is how you should do it, or this would be dope if you did it this way, then go to them. That's what I've been doing. You know, if people aren't approaching me, then I'll just approach them and ask tons of questions, because even if they won't approach you by themselves, people will always answer. So for that reason, you kind of start to break people down and, you know, you kind of make it personal and you just reassure them that, you know, you're young and you're trying to learn and you appreciate their knowledge. And once you start breaking people down, then you'll start having people on your side and you'll come to realize that they'll then go out of their way to say, hey, you did a great job on this, or yo, use my advice, like see what I was saying, and build the connection that way. But it's definitely some cool people in the industry. Like I said, not majority, but people that do want to see you win and, you know, they do want to see you grow as a young writer.
Got you. And like the landscape today is obviously so, so interesting. And you had mentioned the blog thing, and I came up on the sports blog part of, you know, sports blog side of stuff. So I kind of know that, you know, better than the music blog side outside of like reading, because, you know, I was in high school and in middle school when like the blog era for music was huge. So like that shaped a lot of my music fandom. But in terms of like my writing has definitely been a lot more on the sports side. I've been trying to branch, you know, trying to make that crossover. What's that landscape like, you know, as a digital writer, like, you know, coming up with a focus on that as opposed to, you know, cause you put out a lot of work, like you do. Definitely. Looking at your, you know, XXL byline, your complex one, like you put out a lot of work. So what's that pressure like to always have something turning around, always be, you know, working on something, and oftentimes, you know, a lot of ideas at the same time?
Yeah. Oh man. Good question, because it's really crazy sometimes. So just to give like some context, I mean, even in like school or on campus, you're kind of pitching not too often. In school, you might pitch a story or a couple stories once a week, you know, or if you're doing it on your own and kind of freelancing. Like when I was in school, I might pitch stories once every couple weeks or every 3 weeks, as opposed to like leaving college and getting in the game and having the pressure of, you know, pitching every week. But it's not just send a couple ideas, it might be send 7 ideas. You know, that's something that I probably would have sent 7 ideas freelancing in 7 months, like 7 really solid ones. So the pressure is, it's really, really crazy. But just going back to what I said about basketball, it's like you realize that you have an opportunity, and the way I look at it is like, okay, you're either gonna fumble the ball or, you know, you're not, straight up like that. So I kind of use the pressure to like feed into my motivation. But it is challenging. I think once you start to get your feet wet though, and you really start churning, it's way easier to break down. Like something like if somebody says, an editor says, we'll bring 10 ideas this week, it sounds crazy and it sounds overwhelming. But once you start really pumping them out and getting feedback and listening to what's being accepted, then you can kind of train it out. So the pressure is high, but you know, it's definitely easy to use it as motivation in the same breath.
Yeah. And I've got to imagine, like, once you hit your stride and, you know, fully accept, like, you know, this is life now, that like the writing brain, which like all writers know exactly what I'm talking about. Like that writing brain just takes over. And like, that is, you know, that's your thing now. And I imagine that, like, sure, you hit your stride and it's like, yeah, like you just keep going.
Definitely. Definitely. And you know, that's where the passion for the game comes in. I know you can speak to that too. Like, you really love sports, you know, you really love music. You're going to be able to break it down in different ways. It's probably something you're doing with your friends anyway, or in your head by yourself anyway. So I guess it's just more so being able to put it out loud too. Definitely able to hit that stride though.
Since the middle of March, and I mean beyond that, but really since the middle of March, stuff's been completely out of whack, or at least it's felt out of whack. You know, things have been exposed so everyone can see the deal. So yeah. Like, how has coronavirus and COVID-19 and just, you know, the quarantine, how has that affected your work life?
Oh, man, it changed everything. Everything. And it's weird because my specific role, so I'm a writer for XXL and I also do social media. So pretty much after every day at work or every other day, it would be going to listening parties on behalf of the company, or, you know, going to concerts and things of that nature. None of that exists anymore. So it's harder to connect with artists. Everybody's sitting at home, and you would think, okay, well, you know, everybody's sitting at home, they're not doing anything, you know, it'll be easy to do whatever with whoever. But it's not really like that. I think everyone else is kind of taking a step back. Something I've learned is, like, the quarantine has people stepping away more. So it changes everything. There's no physical aspect of it, and it changes music. I mean, people aren't, and we talk about this all the time, like, as a staff, like, people are kind of scared to release music because they don't feel like it's going to connect with the people, or they don't want to drop an album because they can't tour off of it, or, you know, they don't want to do an interview because now they just had to push their mixtape back 3 months. It's changing everything. We're actually working on a piece right now about, like, how it's affected the music industry. But I think now we're getting to a point where it's kind of starting to open up. You know, everyone's not like 6ix9ine and willing to shoot a music video in their house, but artists are fed up too. You know, it's a money thing for them. They can't thrive like they usually can. So now things are starting to set up, but it definitely requires a lot of finessing with this pandemic going on right now.
I'm definitely interested to see how all that rolls out. And it's been interesting to see how a lot of music has been rolled out differently because of the pandemic. Obviously some projects came out as maybe not as scheduled. We got, you know, two Uzi drops right at the beginning. Future came out early. I already have some of your complex stuff about Drake that I want to get into, so we can have a little Six God talk towards the end of this. But
let's do it.
I think that album, you know, the demo dark, like the Darkland demo tapes, I think that was supposed to be a real album that kind of got messed up because of some leaks, and also the promo wasn't going to be able to be what it was supposed to, so that came out differently. Mm-hmm. And then we've had, you know, records like the Lil Baby record and the Anderson .Paak both put stuff out in response to, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, what's happening over there, which I also want to get into.
Yeah.
How have you seen, because it's not just a media problem, and like you said, you know, you push the mixtape back so you don't want to do your interviews. What have you seen from the artists who have released music? Like, how have they attacked it differently than they would have?
I guess they've attacked it more so, if anything, from like a design perspective. So one thing that I've seen is like artists doing things with, for example, with the cover art, making a teller of the time. Like, look at the Baby's last project. You know, he's got the mask on and the cover. He's kind of feeding into it that way. Like, oh, we're on a pandemic. Well, let me make this music that's always going to be attached to that moment. Or even just putting it outright in the lyrics. I mean, no one wants to hear the cliche, I'm sick, no coronavirus. But things like that, you got to think like 5, 10 years from now, we're going to look back and always remember that time and always remember that quarantine. So the ones who are putting out music, they're talking about it, you know, putting it in the raps and stuck in the crib, can't do anything, putting those kind of bars out. And on the design tip as well, with album covers or even like selling masks as a part of the merch instead of just hoodies and hats. So some people are like leaning full into it. And I think that's smart because, like I said, it's always going to be a marker of that time. When you're going through their catalog on Apple Music and you see that one or two project from back in the day with them and a mask on, it's going to take you back to the first half of 2020.
For sure. And you know, I just mentioned those two songs, but I think it was The Bigger Picture by Lil Baby and then Lockdown by Anderson .Paak. They're obviously, I mean, both of those songs mention the fact that because of, you know, what was sparked with the killing of George Floyd a couple weeks ago, you know, it's almost like people forgot about the pandemic, like that went away and the focus sure. shifted. You know, bringing the focus to the Black Lives Matter movement and just that side of things, especially within music media, I've seen a conversation kind of arise about the injustices within the media section. And, you know, I'd like to know about your experience just with that in general in music media so far. But, you know, I just graduated with a magazine journalism degree. You know, as a white kid, I feel at this point, it's like not my place to use my voice to, you know, comment and make money on the material that, you know, the people of this culture are making. Are you seeing any sort of like that conversation arising more? Because like, it's something that I'm becoming more and more cognizant of as things evolve, as I learn more, as I read more, as I talk to more people. Mm-hmm. Is that conversation being had at all within the industry, or is it kind of like a waiting game, I guess?
In terms of speaking out for the Black Lives Matter movement?
Well, it's like speaking out, and also like the way that it does seem kind of manipulative and exploitative how things have been, you know, thus far, especially in regard to rap music, where like you have a lot of people who are standing on the outside and their commentary gets amplified much louder than anyone who's actually inside the culture, you know, lives, you know, that, you know, they're within it. And but those are the people who have the biggest names, the people outside of it, and they end up making a lot of money off it. So has there been any conversation about that? Obviously, I'm interested in your experience and also, you know, just speaking out in general, but that in particular.
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny you said that, because it's something that we were trying to figure out a couple of weeks ago as a staff at XXL, is like how to approach it. And we were trying to have a lot of these conversations. And one thing that I realized just in my experience is everything is so political. Like, I'm not even going to lie, it's extremely frustrating at certain points. Because, you know, for example, like a magazine like XXL should be speaking out, you know, and should be at the forefront of the movement and, you know, saying Black Lives Matter and we support this culture. And this is not to XXL specifically. Obviously, we have addressed it. But I think in these media companies, there's so many politics, you know, it becomes a bigger question, more so higher up and not along the lines of the staff, where it's like, okay, well, we can't say certain things because we don't want to lose this money. Or so-and-so is our biggest supporter, so we can't really say that. Or what about all of our fans and our listeners who don't really agree with this? Like, we can't really do that. Everything is political. And I think in my experience, I've kind of realized that as well. And not to sound like jaded, but I mean, my expectations have lowered completely because of that, because I understand that and I've seen it. But I think now it really is an interesting time, because it's not really a chance for people to say we don't want to say anything or we don't want to do the wrong thing, because people are so used to calling them out now. So things are changing, but it's really just an everlasting conversation of how to approach it. My boss kind of said it perfectly. She's been running XXL for like 20 years, and she was like, I've never experienced this. Like, this is new for everybody. You know, we have to find out what the answer is. Like, we don't know what the answer is. So these conversations are being had, but they're just so political, man. I think everybody's still at the drawing board trying to find out how to approach it. And especially as a magazine, do you just put up a statement and cover it for a week? Do you continue to cover it? Do you change the whole narrative and tone of your magazine? It's like ongoing.
ongoing. No, I can imagine. And I've also got to imagine that it's an interesting conversation, especially for a magazine of XXL stature, because, you know, within this movement, it's clear that, you know, hip hop is going to play a huge role, as it always has. Yep. It's, you know, it's been the voice of a lot of this for, you know, since its inception, really, you know, in the late 70s. So you have that. And then XXL is a pillar of that culture, not just because of the freshman list, but I mean, like, you see everybody, like, whether it's having covers up on walls, having posters of certain covers, having t-shirts with all the covers, like, XXL is XXL. So I've got to imagine there's also, like, and you touched on it, like, a sense of responsibility as that type of publication. Who are the big players? And it's like, because clearly the people at the top in government and everything aren't going to they drop the ball constantly. So it's almost like up to, not up to, but like the people who have that voice that is respected. But
definitely.
You know, another part of this, and you've written about, you know, Kanye a lot. He just released a new single a couple of days ago with Travis, announces a new album, donated $2 million. I think the narrative is kind of almost shifting back, you know, towards, all right, being open-minded towards him. And growing up as a big Kanye fan, like I went to the Yeezus tour in Mohegan Sun in Connecticut when I was, I think, a sophomore in high school, and like blown away by like, yeah, no, it was like, you know, an experience, but blown away by like how he can hold so many people in the palm of his hand and just move people's thoughts and conversation. As someone in the music industry, but also as a music fan, are you seeing that conversation shift with him a little bit? And what do you see for the future with new music? Obviously, it's sounding a little bit different than what we got in the fall from him with Jesus Is King. What are you seeing for Kanye moving forward in this space and also just with music?
Oh, man, that's a fire question. The narrative is definitely switching back on Kanye, and it's so interesting because you already know, like, when he was on that meeting with Trump, got on my MAGA hat, when he was on all of that, everyone was like, oh, Kanye's canceled. Literally up until, I would say, like, this week, when he dropped the song, it's so crazy to see how people change their mind, you know? And Kanye is a legend, but I just think he was making a lot of moves that people weren't really receiving well. So even in terms of the content, like, it was hard to get people to care. And then he dropped the song, and he changed his message, and he's out in the streets, and he's donating money. And it's like, okay, well, this is the Kanye that we know and we miss. And everybody started flocking to him again. So the narrative is definitely changing for Kanye. And I think, like, as a writer, somebody in the industry, you pay attention to all that. And I think that even goes to a lot of artists, you know, it's like, well, where is this coming from? Are you out here protesting as a gimmick? You know, are you out here protesting because you care or because you want to put it on your Instagram story and seem like you're a voice of the people? Are you stepping out there one day, you know, to go march, or are you really in the streets? I think that's something you definitely pay attention to. But either way, you know, if it's fully intentional for Kanye, or if that's really, like, you know, deeply ingrained in him and he's just moving off of that, the narrative is definitely switching. And I think when he drops his next project, people are going to care. I mean, even the song he just dropped with Travis, like, I didn't think it was that fire, but people loved it. You know, they want to see Kanye in that light. Like, you want to see a Cole in that light. You want to see Kendrick in that light. So, I think when he drops his next project, he'll be all right. He'll be all right. He's reeling it back in for sure, and in a smart way.
It's been crazy to see how artists across everything have reacted. Obviously, J. Cole releases a track, and then he and No Name go back and forth on Twitter and in music. And
yeah, what, like, people, what is that?
Yeah, like, it was. I was watching that happen. I was like, what's going on? Like, you know, I didn't even know it was really happening. Then Kendrick. People are looking at him to have, you know, a louder voice, but then you see these real powerful pictures of him out in the streets. They come out. So it's been crazy to see just like the expectations of certain artists and, you know, how they're judged differently based on certain things. Like, you have, you know, T.I. speaking in Atlanta, you know, Lil Baby in the streets on, you know, shooting music videos. YG was shooting music videos. It was all like, it was all crazy to see that speculation. And As a member, obviously, of a writer for XXL, but also you're part of the Twitter thing too. Like you said, social media, but just like on the normal, like, music Twitter, talking shit, like, you're part of that too.
Yeah.
What's that crossover like? Because I think, and this is like probably me looking for advice, like, you know, low key, it's like, what's that crossover like between being the writer and also having to understand the social media part of it? Because you've got that one side that wants to be, to make the big, you know, writing project that, you know, you're proud of. And then there's the other part, you know, what's going to hit, you know, what's going to cause a stir. So, like, what's that cross section like for you?
Definitely. It was challenging at first and kind of something I've kind of eased into, but definitely challenging at first. I think working with like a bigger company, it's easy to like second guess yourself and your moves or something as simple as like an idea or a tweet. But you really just got to trust yourself. You know, it's like, if I live and breathe music and if I'm tweeting about this song on a personal page, if I can break this down on my personal Twitter, then I can break it down on like a double XL page. And obviously you have to move different. You know, you can't tweet like this shit is trash or write that in an article, but I think once you realize like your commitment to the brand, like, okay, this is a news company, I need to report on it, whether it's 6ix9ine or J. Cole, and you also trust your voice in the industry, you make a balance of that. You know, how can I be unbiased, but how can I also speak about this truthfully? It's seamless in that way. But at first it was definitely hard. But I think, you know, like I said, once you begin to trust yourself and understand your voice and understand that you have an opportunity to have your voice amplified for a reason, it becomes easy. That answers your question.
No, yeah, 100%. And I think you see that in the types of stories you write, because, you know, I have three of them pulled up right here, and you've got two of them. It's a comprehensive list about the songs that Kanye, you know, other artists who have sampled Kanye songs, and then the, yeah, you know, best illustrated hip hop albums. So you've got those kind of those list articles that, you know, are going to do, you know, the way we're taught coming up through school, and not the way I assume is, you know, emphasized at these bigger magazines, the things that are, yeah, easier to digest. But then you have, you know, the feature you just put out about the high pitched voice trend in rap, which is a couple thousand words and very clear. You did a ton of research. So, like, definitely, it's easy to see that, you know, that intersection happening in the writing too, and how you're able to, like, you know, split that lane. But I do have two stories from your Complex days pulled up, and, word, you know, I've seen you tweeting a little bit about Drake here and there, and I'm a unabashed, I can't help it, I'm a little bit of a stan, I can't lie.
word.
But I was reading through your stuff, you know, over the last couple of days, and your story about if you're reading this, it's too late, really becoming a turning point for Drake, right early, yeah, you had the line like, legend was a pump fake. I thought that was so, like, I love that. I was like, yeah, it is. Like, honestly, like, I remember playing that for the first time being like, all right, like, you know, it's the cover, we've heard 6ix9ine, we've heard some other stuff, but, like, we still got legend, mm-hmm, we got the short film Jungle the night before, so it was like,
yep,
okay, some softer stuff. But then, you know, you said it was that pump fake, and I was like, that's the perfect way to describe it.
Yeah, fact.
That project, like, when you're going back and you're writing stories about, like, these older projects, and I do want to have the Drake conversation specifically, but, like, what's that like? Like, revisiting stuff in terms of, like, because when that comes out, you're not writing for XXL, you're not writing for Complex, so your brain, your thoughts completely different. Like, what's that like, going back and revisiting a project? Because you are so, like, not necessarily new to the game, but, like, new, like, the big leagues, if that makes sense. Like, what's that like?
100. Man. This is probably one of the funnest things in the world, to be honest, because it's kind of like, I mean, not to, like, keep talking about sports, but I reference everything to sports because I love sports too. But it's kind of like, you know, watching your favorite team play in the finals or the Super Bowl. You're always going to remember that moment. You know, you're going to remember what you were thinking during that moment. You're going to remember how other people were reacting. You're going to remember, like, the rollout. So going back and revisiting things is extremely fun because it enhances that sense of nostalgia. Like, I remember sitting in my dorm room at BBB freshman year, and If You're Reading This came out. And I remember listening to it, like, you know, like, what is this? Like, Drake's on a new lane. At first, I didn't like it. And I'm like, wait, this shit is fire. Like, it brings you back. And I think because you experienced it in a raw way, and, you know, because I experienced it not as a writer, I could really review the situation properly. You know, it's different if you're listening to a project, like, for work, and you're listening to it for leisure. So I think going back is easy because I wasn't listening to it as a writer. I was listening to it as a fan. So it's easy for me to go back and grab those thoughts, you know, and really explain what it was to me in that moment and what it was to everyone else.
Is it, as a writer, and we're taught, especially in school, you know, it's drilled into your head in a lot of things, like, you know, objectivity, but, like, music isn't like that. It's, like, designed to, like, pull on your heartstrings, and that's, like, where the reaction comes from. And that's how, like,
yep,
you can hear how things are put together and be like, oh, that's technically good, but, like, it doesn't move me at all.
Yeah.
Is that kind of hard to, like, put on, like, because you can't just come out and be like, oh, I completely love this. Like, you know what I mean? You have to do it with some grace. Is that tough?
Yeah. Because,
like you just said, like, those moments as a fan are so much more, you know, you feel them in your heart more than, like, when you're, like, listening, being like, yo, like, let's break this down. With that project, I do it because you wrote about it, so I need to, you know, ask a couple more questions about it. The song Star 6-7, where do you think that sits in Drake's discography? Because I was listening to it today, just going back through that project, because I knew we were going to talk about it. I think that's, like, someone, like, top Drake. Like, that's, like, the three different parts of the same song, and they're all unique. They're all, like, they're all crazy. Where do you see that song?
Man, so at first, I probably didn't like Star 6-7 until, like, a couple years ago. And it wasn't bad, but I was like, eh, it's not the most fire on this tape. But now I definitely appreciate it, man. Like, Drake is really a musical chameleon. He can take it anywhere, and he has the confidence more than anything to take it in whatever direction he can. So I fuck with Star 6-7, and I think I also was roped in by the intro. I always think about how crazy it is, and hopefully one day I'm trying my hardest. I want to do the Lil Wayne Young Money documentary, but in that specific situation, I always think about, like, it's crazy how Wayne put on two of the biggest artists in rap history, Nicki Minaj and Drake. And I always think about what his conversations with them are like, or how he was coaching them and the things that he was saying. So to have Drake, you know, kind of sample that in the intro, an interview from Wayne saying, like, basically, we're about to go in here, we're about to fuck shit up. Like, I'm not worried about anything else but killing everybody and killing the song. I think that just speaks to Drake's legacy. So the song is ranked higher in my head for that reason. But what do you think about it?
I mean, it's like one of my five favorite Drake songs of all time. Like, everything like you said, that, yeah, that intro, like, come in the studio with, like, clips, ammo, like, you know, upset about how rap is today. Like, first of all, with the, like, IG live battles that have been going on, and, like, I don't think anyone could beat Wayne. I've come to that conclusion. Right. I don't think anyone can really even touch him, because he could give 20 of his guest verses on, like, pop songs and still kill people.
Fact.
Like,
that's a fact.
Like, that would be crazy. And you wrote about it too. Like, that summer 2015. Obviously, the song is summer 16, and that was supposed to be the summer he went crazy. Views came out in April, but that summer 15 run, I don't think I've ever seen a more dominant, like, just one artist taking over the entire game, and, like, couldn't do wrong. I mean, from dropping that project to the Meek Mill thing to a tape with Future in the fall. I mean, just those three things, but everything in between was just insane.
Yeah, he was on fire. And I think Drake always knew that he was on a whole different level. And even if, I mean, you know, you said you like Drake. So if you go back to his earlier stuff, he would kind of weave in those thoughts of, like, you know, I'm the best. Like, I know I can go best toe-to-toe with anybody. But I think that was really the time period, that 2015 time, that 2015 summer, where he was like, forget the humble stuff. Like, I'm going to kill you, and we're going to acknowledge the fact that I'm going to kill you. So what a time. Like, literally.
Nah, what a time. So, like, you wrote about 30 for 30 freestyle. Obviously, you know, he said what he said in that, where he said the higher-ups have all come together, you know, decided to end his run. We have these higher-ups, and we have your other story about Drake duos, which I really appreciate. And you had Drake and Wayne 3, or no, Drake and Future 3, Drake and Wayne 2, Drake and Ross 1.
Yep.
Give me your favorite song from all three of those duos.
Oh, man. Oh, man. And just, I will say, narrowing that down, like, we had a meeting and decided that top three as a staff, but it was so hard because I feel like either of the options can go for the best duo. But Drake and Wayne, I gotta go Miss Me. That's just my song. Yeah.
My senior, like, quote in high school is from there.
Oh, for real? What was it?
Do right and kill everything.
Yeah. Like, man, I think I was in, like, middle school. I just started playing football for the first time. And that Miss Me was just crazy, man. I think that was one of the first times I heard Drake on a different level, you know, from, like, Best I Ever Had to Karaoke. When he was on Miss Me, he was coming different. So that's definitely the first one that popped in my head for Drake and Lil Wayne.
All right.
Drake and Future, I gotta go Live from the Gutter. Once again, just Drake on the harder side, but more so Future's verse in that. And I'm from Atlanta, so maybe I'm biased, but I think just a crazy track. Just a crazy track. They both locked in, and I can't really decide, like, who had the better verse. I feel like everybody delivered 10 out of 10. And Drake and Ross, that's so hard, man. First thing that's popping in my head is Aston Martin Music, but
okay,
Drake didn't really have a verse in Aston Martin, so I don't even know if that's valid. But that's the first thing that's popping in my head, so I'm going to stick with it.
What's crazy is the music video, Paris Morton Music, is the last verse.
Yeah, yeah,
like, it's exactly. It's tacked on. So in my head, that was always on Aston Martin Music. So I was like, this song is like, we got a whole Rick Ross song, then like a 4-minute Drake verse to end it. This is like the most, I was like stunned, but nah, those are three. I mean, you can't really go wrong with any choices in there, but yeah, no, Miss Me, Live from the Gutter. And then for me, it was like always Wayne. The Wayne for me is Believe Me. because that just the way that, because that was 2015, I'm pretty sure too. So like that was just that summer that was like, you can't even stop. Like that was just Drake and Future's tough for me.
Yeah,
I really love Desires. I know it's like one of the more underrated ones on the new project, but I heard that when that first leaked, like that really, I was like, okay. But Stay Scheming Forever is like the first song that sold me on Drake and was like, nope, this is it. So Stay Scheming always has a place.
Yeah, you're right. I forgot about Stay Scheming. Or like I'm on one. Damn, I feel you.
I'm on one. Like that whole era, 2012, 2013, when they all of them were always on the same songs. It was like him, Ross, Wayne, French Montana, and the music videos always would come out with the DJ Khaled. Like it was crazy. That whole era was crazy. But
absolutely, that's like the time I fell in love with music. It's like on Dat Piff every day, searching for stuff like that.
Same. I think about summer 2013 often when I think about coming up just as a music fan. Like I remember the day Yeezus, Born Sinner, and Watching Movies with the Sound Off by Mac all came out in the same day, and I was like, this is wild. Then I ended up seeing the Yeezus tour after that. But
word,
man, I appreciate your time, appreciate you coming on. If you got anything to plug, you know, obviously you're over at XXL, so all you got to do is really Google Kemet High. That's what I did. But if you want to plug your socials.
Word. So I don't have an Instagram, on the contrary to probably the entire generation that's my age. But
I'm
always on Twitter, khigh5, khigh5. Always talking about music, like plug me with music or any new artists.
Perfect, man. I'm excited to see it. Again, this is Dome Theory. Catch us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Audio Boom, anywhere you can find podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Dome Theory, Instagram at Dome Theory. I'm Taylor McLeod. Again, this has been Kemet High. Appreciate your time. Appreciate you listening.
Appreciate you for having me.